Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Marshall Masters as we talk about Planet X. I've got a few more questions for him, then we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Marshall Masters with us. Marshall, is there any way that people independently can verify this on their own?
Yes. If they go to YOWUSA.com, or I have a direct link domain, which is twosunsinthesky.com. You'll have all the videos, and I give an explanation. There are the links there for Turrialba. There's also, it's important for folks, there's one that's a local meteorological site that tracks weather conditions there. And what I do as a usual rule is I'll check that first, because if humidity is over 90%, odds are you're just not going to have any good viewing that day. You check that, but then you can do it. But the most important thing, George, is somebody, you go and you look at that, and I would say the best time to look at it is from, say, 4:30 to 5:30, and just sit there for an hour and watch it. That's when it sinks in. You know, if it's a still image, you can debunk any still image. If there's one thing ufology has proven, any still image can be debunked. It does, you know, it just depends on how trivial you want to go.
Right.
But it's another thing to sit there and watch it live. This feed that comes out of Turrialba is maintained by a university down there, and there's no archive on the site. The feed is there for the benefit of the folks there that live in the foothills around these volcanoes. And it's continuously pumping high definition imagery. And you sit there for an hour and just watch it. You cannot help but come to the conclusion you are seeing a natural object. People will say it's all kinds of things. And one of the common things is that they'll say it's Venus, all right? And here's something important that people have to understand, because all tonight I've been talking about the ecliptic. The ecliptic is the plane of the system. If you were, it's like the equator of the sun that just stretches all the way out to the 12 signs of the zodiac. And if you're looking at the ecliptic, you have to remember we're cockeyed to it. Our planet is tilted on its axis. And so the ecliptic is more like running north and south, and it's going to vary. A good way to think about it is, you know, on the old cars, the windshield wipers were on the top, and they'd sweep back and forth. Well, from the point of view of the camera at Turrialba, that's what's happening with the ecliptic. Now, the point here is when you see the object to the right of the sun, it is north of the ecliptic. If you see it to the left of the sun, it is south of the ecliptic. That's real important. Left is south, right is north. And when you are looking at the imagery, you are looking west by southwest. As a matter of fact, in the supplemental video I did for you guys to announce the show, the opening shot where I have the titles on it is actually a beautiful sunrise shot that Barbara got. And the shadow of the volcano, it was taken at 4 minutes after sunrise, and the shadow gives you exactly nice due west, all right? And so you can see where the camera is oriented. Now, there were two cameras at the same volcano site imaging the exact same object. There was one that was there from 2010 through 2011. It was an older NTSC standard definition camera. It wasn't pointed west by southwest. It was pointed southwest. All right. So it was even looking further below, you know, the equator than the new one is. So which is the reason why it probably picked it up for very brief periods of time in 2010. So when somebody's saying it's a lens defect, it's an aberration, and all of these things, well, you've got two completely different fixed-mounted surveillance cameras using completely different lenses and technologies. and they're both imaging the same doggone object at the same time from the same place. That's the chilly thing about this.
Edgar Cayce predicted that the North American continent would be submerged, that it would be drastically altered. Might this planet have anything to do with that prophecy?
I think it is. I think that this is, and not necessarily the object that we're looking at. I'm more concerned about the other object that these guys that we saw in the disclosure videos and Skyview, this one that they're currently observing. And that's the one that's going to have the strong interaction with the sun, but also it has got a huge dust cloud of iron tracking along with this thing. This is a dirty, filthy bunch of rocks coming through. But think back to Exodus. What's the first plague of Exodus? The waters are turned blood red. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Well, go to a brickyard and say, hey, I want some nice red bricks for my chimney. What are they going to do? They're going to take their standard mix, and what do they add to it to give you nice red bricks? Iron. Okay? So we have all of this iron that comes in. It falls on the earth, flies through this, and all of this is going to go into the oceans. It will turn all of the surface waters blood red. That's the reason why for years I have always told people, if you have a well and it's shallow, go deep, go to the artesian water. But also it's going to be dragging all kinds of objects and meteorites with it. So right now and the interesting thing is more people are watching what's happening now and reporting now than ever before. You know, earlier you asked me about the Mayan prophecy. To me, the Mayan prophecy was hugely successful, because the whole purpose of any prophecy is just make people look at what the heck is happening in the world around them. That's it. That's the whole point of prophecy.
It did that. That's for sure.
Yes. People are looking, and that's the reason why I'm getting new sources of information. People are looking, they're seeing, they're reporting stuff to me. I mean, it takes me hours to slog through email every day. And I'm excited about that, because now that people are looking and they're thinking and they're starting to set things aside and they're starting to prepare, that's the whole thing for me. That's the whole mission, is survival and to help people fight for their lives. Because I'll tell you, that's the last thing the elites want. The more of us that would perish in a pole shift, the better it suits them. Matter of fact, if we all get posed and they come up out of the bunkers, plant the flag, they know they can repopulate.
They'd love it.
So, yeah, absolutely. It would go straight into their hands.
They want to reduce the population anyways, don't they?
Yeah. Perfect eugenics. I mean, think about it. All they have to say is, it's not us.
We didn't do it.
That thing in the sky.
Yeah. Good point. Let's take some calls here. Let's go to Eric at a anonymous location east of the Rockies. Hello, Eric.
Yeah, Mr. Norrie.
Hi.
Yeah, I haven't talked to you before. I got in with Art back in 2005, so this is another anniversary.
Well, there you go.
I certainly enjoy your show, and tell Mr. Masters I certainly enjoy his website and all the information. Okay, here's what I'm going to say. If Mr. Masters knows about, from what your guest before was saying, the Vatican telescopes, and specifically the one that's down in Antarctica, and if that was there to monitor Planet X's arrival, with probably why it was built, because to put a telescope like that in such an unforgiving environment, I'd see no other use for it to do it except for that. Number two, I think that since this is the new pope being elected or whatever, today, I think it's the responsibility, in a sense, for the Vatican to disclose what they know about what might be coming, since they've been monitoring Planet X for a long time. And if any of the listeners might be interested in sending some emails or something to that effect, asking him to do that. And number three, if you do a Google search of Rehoboth Planet X, Rehoboth, Delaware picture in Google Images, you'll find from Nancy Leader's website picture that was taken about 2007 that says it's purported to be Planet X there rising, and it's a reddish-looking planet-like object. So I wonder if he could report if that might be real, and thank you very much for listening to my calls.
All right. Very good.
Wow, that was a lot of issues there.
We'll save the Vatican telescope for last, but go ahead.
Okay. So which one do we start with first?
Well,
I forgot the first.
Huh? We'll talk about the Vatican telescope. That was his first question. We'll do that last.
All right. On the SPT, I'm the guy who broke the story on the SPT. It's my site that broke the story. And I'm the guy that broke the story on the disclosure videos that came out. And so I think, you know, I have been following this for years. And it's always been kind of irritating for me when somebody goes, well, why can't I see it? Hey, I can see it anytime I want. I just simply fire up the videos. You know, the guy, people just think that the government is going to come clean about something this big. That's an amazing thing. They just, okay, they're going to lie to me about everything else, but this, they're going to be honest. And it's like, I don't know where you get this threshold test from. I really don't. Because what happened was when the Bureau of Shock 2012 came out, and I was fortunate enough to have an email exchange with that guy before he got hammered. But he came in, his account was compromised and stolen on YouTube. Now, you can go to YouTube and prove that you started that account and it's yours, and you'll get it back. But in his case, if he had to do that, he would have to reveal his true identity instead of using a drop mail account. And at that point, they'd have pinpointed him, and he would have been in deep yogurt. And so they compromised this site, trashed it. It was just really cruel. But the other guy, DNR38, he actually had footage from a friend who was down there at SPT Telescope. Now, I also get other stuff on the SPT back at that time. And one of the things that was happening was a gentleman who runs a merchant bank system in New Zealand. And it was really amazing. We were having a conversation about this one night. He said to me, would you like to set the price of the euro to the dollar for a few hours? I said, are you serious? And he said, no, you're going to call it for the whole world what the dollars are trading against euros. And so, and you go four decimal places. And it's like, I said, okay, I set it for that. Boom, the number shows up. Okay. Then, I mean, that just completely blew me away that I could arbitrarily set the trading of euros before the stock exchange would open in New York. Now, he told me that his merchants that are using his credit card system are calling him because they know he follows this thing. And what they're saying, then this was a few years ago, they were saying the folks that were going to Antarctica were carping and complaining continuously because this is where they go. It's their last stop before they head to Iceland. You know, that's it. If you don't get it there, it's like living on an island. If you don't take it there, it ain't going to be there. And so what they were saying was that at that time, and this was after the SPT was put up, and your caller was absolutely right. The SPT, that what they were saying the SPT was used for, the kind of science, they could have done that science for a fraction of the money in Argentina anyplace else. They didn't have to go to Antarctica. I mean, just the telescope itself, not the facility that it sits on, just the telescope in its base, that was so heavy it took, we had calculated 30 C-130 Hercules flights just to take in the telescope.
Huge.
We're talking about a Berlin airlift
for
move
a telescope.
All this stuff in when they could have done it in Argentina. But what the guy was telling me in New Zealand was that people were complaining because there were direct C-130 flights coming out of the U.S., no stopovers whatsoever, mid-air refueling, all the way to Antarctica. Research teams would get off. They would go into the building for 2 weeks, didn't talk to anybody, and then they would just leave. And what everybody was angry about was that down there at the station, everybody shares everything. They all talk about everything. Everything's open book. And all of a sudden, they've got these special nonstop flights with mid-air refueling coming down there, teams of researchers going into the SBT facility, making observations, and then going back home and not talking to anybody. And there's all this kind of stuff going on. So, of course, they've been watching it. And of course, they're tracking it. You know, but there's the story on this goes way, way back. And, you know, when we start looking forward to the rest of it, yeah, now it makes sense. You look at the Vatican Observatory. They have an observatory in Arizona. It's out in the southeast corner of Arizona. Now, there are a limited number of what I would call sweet viewing spots on the face of the planet for telescopes. That's one of them. And the Vatican telescope is situated so that it will have the longest duration view of this object. It'll be tracking it for a long time because they want to know when it's going to come back. They want to be able to plot and get an ephemeris on it. So, you know, George, it just gets deep.
It is.
Now, what was that third one?
Gets deeper and deeper. We're not going to have time for the third one. We're almost at the break here, Marshall. But I want to ask you specifically, people want to track you. Would they go to your website? Where else?
Just YOWUSA.com, and you'll track me right from there. My YouTube channel is Yowbooks, YOWBOOKS.
All right, maybe time for one more quick question before the break. Let's go to Tyson, first-time caller in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Tyson.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
This is my first time being on the show, and I was around 18, Willis, so I was just flipping through on radio, and it just caught me, you know.
There you go.
I've been pretty much, you know, looking and saying the same thing, but I heard about this, but I never really, you know, knew that much. But my question is do anybody know, you know, when it would, you know, would it come in our atmosphere? And, you know, I was listening and you were saying what it would do, but do anybody, you know, have like maybe a time limit when you think it's going to, when it's going to happen, or what do we do? Or
what was that time scale again, Marshall? Real fast.
Okay. Well, first thing, caller, whatever's going to come into the atmosphere is going to be what we're seeing now, meteors. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But these objects are not going to hit the Earth. Anybody tells you that, you know, is as dumb as a sack of hammers. Don't buy it. They're not going to do that. There's no historical precedent for it. The ancient accounts tell us, no. It's the biggest problem we have with this is its interaction with our sun. That is going to be the number one killer of everything else. Now, when? What I will tell you is the same thing I have been saying for a decade. 2012 was a warm-up band. 2013 is the headline act. Now, if you look at what 00 Skyview is saying, the party starts in June.
Stay with us. More to come on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about some doomsday preppers. Make sure you're part of that show. And when we come back in a moment with Marshall Masters, it's final phone call time on Coast to Coast AM. Marshall, the possibility of a binary star system in this solar system, not like Planet X, something different?
Well, what we have is we're in a binary system, all right? And this is something that astronomers have been calling before the conversation went silent after what I consider to be the assassination of Harrington, which was a result of him appearing in that documentary with Sitchin. But we're in a binary system, which means we have two stars. This is, you know, and the thing is 90% of the systems out there and that we know of that they've charted are multiple star systems. All right. You know, less than 10% are single sun systems. So, you know, we would have to be an exception to the rule in the first place to be a single sun. But also, if we're in a two-star system, that explains why we're moving backwards into the age of Aquarius, all right? It explains why a lot of the oddities about our system. And what we have right now is actually a mini constellation. A mini constellation is essentially a miniature solar system that is orbiting another solar system. So you have, you have a sun with planets and moons, and that's this mini constellation, which would be presumably Nemesis, the dark star. Mm-hmm. That's the core of it, and which is the nature of this star is one that it is only visible in infrared until it comes inside the orbit of Jupiter, and then it lights up like a comet. But it's also going to have planets orbiting it, and planets going to have moons and satellites. It's going to have debris fields. This thing is, when it comes through like a Roman procession, starting with the slaves at the front and the pooper scoopers at the back and everything else in between. So that's what we're going to expect. But again, it's the solar interaction that really troubles me the most, because when our sun starts interacting electrically with this mini constellation, this, if you will, just this miniature solar system that is coming through the core of our system, which orbits these two systems orbiting each other, then what happens with the solar interaction? You want to know the story on that? Read the Bible.
Yeah, it's right there.
I was doing it. I just did a series called The Great Tribulation with Robert Ryland. We did a whole series of it because I'm not Christian, but I wanted to understand Christian eschatology, which is study of end times and looking at all of this. And so that was the reason why I did it. I keep finding connect the dot links between what we're seeing now and what is in the Bible. And I have to say that as a non-Christian, and it stuns me, but what is this? What does the Bible warn us? That the sun is going to roast us. And that is what I see is the real, that's the real concern. The sun roasts us. And I want to make one point to all of your listeners, and I want you to put this, burn this into your head. Number one survival thing, you're going to do food, you're going to do water, you're going to do shelter. But there's going to be a lot of volcanic ash and pumice. One of the plagues of Exodus was the boils. The boils are called shikken, and that is a Hebrew term. And shikken is caused by ash or pumice getting into the skin. There's going to be a lot of that in the air. If you can't wash it off with water, find clean dirt or find clean clay, but you've got to get that off. Otherwise, you will develop horrific ulcers, and it will be incredibly painful. You don't want to do that, so keep. Make sure that when the solar storms are happening and everything's erupting and we've got pumice and ash and just all kinds of foulness in the air, you've got to make sure your skin care, because that'll kill you dead as a doornail.
Interesting.
Just remember that.
Okay, let's take some calls now. Here we go. First time caller. We've got Charles in Queens, New York. Hey, Charles, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to know why we can't use the Hubble telescope to check out this planet X.
It's probably too close for the Hubble. Marshall, what do you think?
Well, I think that the Hubble's being used for that. I mean, you look at the Hubble's life, mission life was extended. You look at, for example, SOHO. Now, that satellite, that solar observatory, has been up and it's past its lifespan. They've extended the mission. They're not deactivating anything, and they're adding solar observatories like crazy. So that's the reason why all of a sudden we have this whole new fleet, if you will, of space-based solar observatories that we're watching. And there's a lot of valuable information that's coming in. So they're using it. It's not that they can't see it. It's that they're not telling us. That's all. I mean, let me ask you. If I knew what stocks were going to be trading at a year from now, would I be telling you or quietly buying options?
I think you'd be quietly buying options.
Bada bing, there you go. Same thing with that.
You know,
remember, the other caller was going, maybe the new Pope is going to, you know, he's going to break clean, come to Jesus and tell us all about this. I don't think so. I think he would love to do that, but he might meet an untimely end if he did. Because, frankly, what happens if the church just come out and says, you know, we really should have told you about this a long time ago, but now we're going to tell you? And people are going to be pretty angry about that. And I would say they're more afraid of the anger. It's easier to wait for the guacamole to hit the fan when everybody is standing out in the street, pointing up at the sky alongside their neighbors and pooping their collective pants. At that point, people are ready for anything, just anything. And that's the whole thing. Band-aid the whole deal, keep this whole carousel going until the music stops, and that's when everybody realizes there's a whole lot of people and not too many chairs.
Let's go to Brian, Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Brian. Thanks for holding.
Yes, great show, George.
Thank you.
Yes, I got a question about this Exodus thing and the plagues of Egypt. All that happened around 1200 BC, and when you add 3,600 years to that, that means it won't be coming around for another 400 years, so the intervals don't match up. So if you have an incoming planetary object, this thing can't be the Sumerian Planet X thing.
Hmm. What say you, Marshall?
Well, first off, it's go mark a calendar with Exodus, all right? I mean, there's when they're dating Exodus, there's all kinds of assumptions. You know, in the Bible, it doesn't say who the Pharaoh of Exodus was. It doesn't say so in the Colburn Bible either, and that's the Egyptian count. Nobody wanted to say who the Pharaoh was. But people still have all kinds of ideas of who the Pharaoh was and when it happened. What you're listening to are interpretations. I would say one is that, two is it's a long period orbit. You know, it's like British Rail. It gets here when it gets here. It's not going to come like a fascist train schedule. You go, okay, 3,600 years, tick, 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 tick. Remember, the universe is not unfolding at the speed of human expectations. That's my answer to the caller.
Well, good point. All right, back to the other calls. Let's go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa now, east of the Rockies. Hey, Douglas, go ahead.
Hi. Great show.
Thank you,
George.
Sir.
And Marshall? I was wondering, I've been down to Antarctica about 8 times, McMurdo and Little America, and I was wondering how much further south towards the pole is the telescope?
Scott Edmundson Station.
Huh?
It's at Scott Edmundson.
Oh, Scott Edmundson?
Yeah.
Okay, and then I was wondering... when these planets get closer to the Earth, are we talking about debris fields that are going to be leaving the Earth, like the Grand Canyon and stuff like that?
Well, what I can tell you is that this object is coming in with, it's being preceded and it will be followed by a large field of iron dust and debris. So we're going to see comets, meteorites, meteorite showers. This stuff's going to come in, and it's going to, it really depends on location, location, location.
Right.
Where are we in relation to it and the sun when all of this happens? And so what we can do is pray for the most benign and gentle flyby.
Are we talking about winds of 300 or 400 miles an hour?
Well, I could see winds of 300 to 400. I can't say to, but you're looking at a lot of turbulence. You're going to be looking at rising seabeds. We're looking at what I think Edgar Cayce is right on the money in terms of the pole shift that he predicted. There's been pole shift predictions where the Earth flips head over heels, stops, starts turning around again. What Casey was talking about is a difference of degree as opposed to a difference of kind. And it's going to be, we're going to have a deluge, but think of it as a slosh. You know, you walk with a big pail that's full to the top with water, and you're swinging it back and forth, and the water is sloshing out from one side to the other.
So you're actually talking about underground bunkers at higher elevations if you want to survive this.
Well, I would say that, you know, if you're near a coastline, you need distance and you need elevation.
Right.
That's the most important thing you want to be aware of. And there's going to be a huge loss of life along the shorelines because that's where most Americans live. And, you know, once things get hit, you know, think about it. If you're monitoring the Harbinger signs, if you're on the East Coast, you're watching what's happening in the Canary Islands like a bird dog. If you're on the West Coast, you're watching what's happening in Cascadia like a bird dog. And if you're starting to see things that really trouble you, it's time to put everybody in a station wagon and take a 3-day road trip. And because if you can get out of town 24 hours ahead of everybody else, you got clear roads, plenty of gas, food, accommodations, everything you need, you're out of there. Otherwise, go back to that movie. I mean, and I think an excellent movie for people to see what we're really facing is Deep Impact of all of those action movies. That to me is a very realistic film, very well done. You know, Armageddon and the other ones were very entertaining, a lot of fun, but that's the one that you can see. And if you get caught out on the freeways, you drown. So the best thing you do is you get out and, you know, you get ahead of this thing.
What are you doing, Marshall? What are you doing now to prepare yourself for this thing?
Well, you know, what we did was last year, we moved to a higher, much higher elevation and more inland. I positioned myself where I know in terms of my local risks, what I've got to deal with. And what I tell folks is, you know, you got to be practical. You know, not all of us can afford to go to South Africa and build a bunker. All right. But you live where you live. You work where you work. Your kids go to school there. Make your life there. And you've got to figure out what are the threats in your local area. You got to get local on this thing. And you've got to know what your harbinger signs are you going to monitor that are going to be events that you have to be worried about. So it's being an awareness. It's not waiting for somebody else to tell you. If you're waiting to find out from CNN, you'll learn how you're going to die that day. You've got to be ahead of CNN. And they, by the way, they don't have a science department. They haven't had for years. That's the reason why they do, unfortunately, dead white female stories. But you've got to stay ahead of it. You've got to be aware of your local area, and you've got to be able to scoot and move and be flexible. We don't get a chance to go to the bunkers. You don't have a Golden Wonka ticket. Lump it. That's just the way it is. But I will say this about the guys that think they're clever in their deep underground bunkers and all of that. Nothing ever goes according to plan.
Ever.
They're just as vulnerable as we are. You got to be able to move fast on your feet, be adapted, and ready to rock and roll. And it doesn't take a whole lot of preparation. And it's just, and if you're thinking about these things and you're going through, you'll be ahead of the game. You know, think about the Sumatra superquake and tsunami. There was people out there that said, "Oh, my God, Harriet, look at that. The fish are all up on exposed. Get a basket. It's a free lunch." And while all of the people with the money and the education and the smarts were going out and picking up the fish,
bang,
ignorant natives were running feet first up the hill screaming, "Feet don't fail me now."
With the elephants right in front.
Yeah, you bet. Absolutely. You know, the only animals that died were domesticated animals. All of the animals in the wild, they knew. Get to altitude. Get up there. The ignorant natives that we make fun at because they sit there with their drums and they tell folklore about when the hoochie-coochie tree starts to shake because the turtle's got an itch. I don't care if the Earth's got an itch and you're going uphill, you're going to live while all the idiots out there with the BMWs and the fat checking accounts are drowning like rats.
On a 1 to 10 basis, 10 being the highest, Planet X, 8, 9, 10, you think, how realistic?
To me, it's a 10.
Wow.
To me, it's a 10. It's just, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
It's when. Well, you know, Nancy Leader was off by 10 years. How come?
Well, I don't know. Ask the channel to the Zetas of yourself. You know, I mean, like, I love Nancy. To me, I adore Nancy. She has a different technique and a different way of going at things. You can't bet what she's doing because she's channeling it. It's subjective.
I know. But she was off. She was off Marshall by 10 years. Marshall, we're out of time. Good luck with all your work, okay?
Thank you so much.
You got it. Marshall Masters' book, by the way, Planet X Forecast and 2012 Survival Guide. That's what he's into. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.